Thank you so much for joining. My name is Prashant Kumar, your host. I'm the owner of, founder of my company, My Realty Gains. All of my companies that I have, I like the word Realty Gains. So I name my companies with that name, Steeplechase Realty Gains or whatever. So My Realty Gains is the name of my company. I live in New York. Just a little bit about myself, and I won't hold you too much for about myself, but just a little bit. I come from a strong technology background. I've had many, many management positions in many, many big companies, corporates in America. And about 5 years ago, I got drawn into real estate. I started with single families, but immediately jumped into multifamilies. I own about 100 units for myself and about 1,200 units in which I am a general partner in a very hands-on capacity, right? Besides multifamily, I do assisted livings also. We are looking at a couple of projects this year that we may acquire at least one of them, one or two of them. So that's just my, bragging things about myself. But the real thing that I have is, like to share the knowledge that I have gained, the experience that I have gained, try to expand the network, connecting, educating like-minded people. Never charge, it's not about charging money or anything. I never charge anything to begin with, but to share what I have gained from my mentors. So I believe in sharing the knowledge, my knowledge grows automatically. So I come from that fundamental mindset. So I spend a lot of time helping at folks at different levels. And again, I'm coming from a very humble attitude right now. I'm not bragging about myself. I spend a lot of time teaching folks meditation. I spend a lot of time teaching about real estate. I spend a lot of time, and even the choices in real estate are multifamily and assisted living. They are to help somebody at some level, right? So that's my fundamental motto of my life. I plan to do syndication in my life, continue to expand the network. And this is the webinar which I do once in 2 weeks. I invite industry leaders, a lot of nice people who have done a lot of work in real estate, and bring them to this webinar and share the knowledge with them. So that is just about myself. Having said that, I'm going to introduce Lisa. And guys, please hang on till the end of the webinar, because at the end of the webinar, I plan to give away, a few freebies. So just hang on. Nothing substantial, but something you would like. Or just give your email address and you'll get few. I'll talk about that a little bit later on. I don't want to ruin the surprise. But I have Lisa Hilton with me today. I met Lisa. She and I are part of a mastermind group. We connected very well a couple of months ago. She invited me on her podcast. And at that time, I said, Lisa, you have to come to my webinar also, because she's wealth of knowledge, So Lisa is the founder of lisahilton.com. She's real estate. That's the real estate investment company that provides opportunities for entrepreneurs and business owners to invest in tax-efficient real estate investments, right? He's also the host of the Level Up REI podcast, which airs every Tuesday and first Thursday of each month. And in that, she converses with a lot of passive investors and syndicators. She's CPA. She has worked for 10 years, in audit with PwC, Big Fours, and 4.5 years as a controller in a private equity real estate fund at a Los Angeles investment firm. So that's a 14 and a half years worth of experience in audit and controlling the real estate investment fund, So that's a massive, massive experience. And I want to pick Lisa's brain on that. Her current mission is to provide podcast episodes and investment opportunities for entrepreneurs and business owners to level up their businesses and real estate investing to build long-term wealth and financial freedom. Lisa, thank you so much for your time today. I welcome you on our webinar, and I would like to talk to you. I have a lot of things to talk cover today.
So yeah, thank you for having me, Prashant. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
You are very welcome, and I'm going to stop sharing, okay? And you, after that, you can start sharing the screen.
Okay.
I know you have some slides, and we want to hear all good things from you today.
Yep. So I just, hold on a second.
Today we have a small cozy group. I hope folks will have an opportunity to talk to you directly and ask you questions. Just feel free.
Definitely. Yeah. Bringing that up, and then the screen. This one. Okay, great. And then, whoops. And present.
Yes, this is what I wanted to learn today. Invest in passively in real estate fund 101, right?
Yes. So, this presentation is, the point of it is to provide passive investors, and there's a little bit on for syndicators as well, about real estate funds and what are some of the things, the pros and the cons, all the different types of structures that are out there, and some of the things that they need to look out for or think about when they are choosing to invest in a real estate fund. So to kick things off, I'm just going to move that over to the next slide. So I have my disclaimer, like I'm not offering to sell or solicit any securities here. We're just, everything here is just informational purposes. So just covering myself there. And then a little bit about me. So I discovered passive investing in real estate not too long ago in 2019. However, I grew up around real estate. My father was a contractor. He built 14 apartment units that we still hold today. And during that time, when he built those apartment units, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And I was around in middle school at that time. So by the time I ended up going to college, my father passed away when I was a sophomore in college. But because he built those apartment units, my parents were able to take care of myself and my two younger siblings. So that's really what gave me the insight about real estate investing and the power of how real estate can, help you depending on how you invest. So fast forward during that time, as Prashant has introduced me, I've spent 10 years in public accounting and then 4.5 years as a controller on private equity real estate funds. So my entire career has been in funds. And I then also had an opportunity in 2019, shortly after I made my second investment into a real estate syndication, I had the opportunity to create a fund of my own, which was, we're going to talk about what that fund looked like a little bit later on, but it was pretty much just a special purpose vehicle to invest in one investment deal in the Atlanta area. So myself and a few other ladies raised $500,000 to invest. That's where I got my first taste of, actually doing a fund on my own and not in the institutional space. And then a little bit here about my background. So I went to school for accounting. I went to the University of Georgia. I am an inactive CPA in the state of California. And then a little bit there, which I've covered already. So jumping right in there, like syndications and funds. So syndications are essentially where you set up their group investments, where you have, essentially two main parties. You have the general partner team that is responsible for acquiring the asset managing the asset, raising all the money, as well as investor relations. And then you have your partners that are investing capital into the deal. So that's typically what syndications look like. The special purpose vehicles, however, they can also be considered fund of funds as well. So special purpose vehicles are entities that are set up to then invest in, say, one particular investment, or it could be multiple different investments. So that's typically what the special purpose vehicles are. Then you have multi-property specified offerings. So what those are typically is, you, once again, an entity that is set up to invest in multiple different investments that are already identified upfront. So like, for instance, you've created an entity and you've already identified, you know, a multifamily, maybe you're planning to do only these four multifamilies. So you've identified the four multifamilies already, and that is the specified offering. So it's very clear. Sometimes on Facebook, I'll see offerings for like 20, a portfolio of like say 26 multifamilies. And like that would sort of get categorized in that as well. Then the fourth up here is blind funds. So blind funds are where these are entities, once again, entities that are set up, and typically they will have investment strategy. So the investment strategy could be multifamily, value add, and they'll say that they plan to have this fund for maybe 7 to 10 years, and they're planning on raising, I don't know, maybe 100 million. So they're going to, you know, use that money to then essentially invest in, as they stated, multifamily value add type assets. So that's typically how the blind funds are. The key difference between these guys and the ones before is that the blind funds, the asset is not identified at the time at which you are introduced to that fund. So when you're investing based on the investment strategy and the investment plan. So that's key to know.
Mm-hmm. I have a question here. So if you have a multi-property fund or specified offering, you already have identified those properties beforehand. Mm-hmm. And then you are taking investors' money in a fund, and that fund is buying or putting the down payment for those properties.
That's right. Right? Exactly.
And the special purpose vehicle, SPV, is that you have one entity, you have taken money from investors, and that SPV is investing into your deal or somebody else's deal.
Correct. Right? It could be investing in your deal or someone else's deal. Exactly.
And the blind fund is, you are saying that my objective of this fund is 7% return to my investors, and a 20% upside at the end of 5 years.
That's right.
And I will take this money, and I'm at the leisure to invest in whatever properties I want to invest in.
Well, typically the investment manager will say upfront what their investment strategy is. Because look, as an investor, and this is something that we get into later on in the slides, is that as an investor, when you're looking at investing in a fund, you want to understand what the investment strategy of this fund is. Mm-hmm. Because that helps you to determine, number one, whether that's in alignment with how you want your money to be working in real estate. And then number two, it helps you in assessing whether this operator, this investment manager, has the experience and expertise, track record, doing this kind of executing on this type of strategy to make sure that you minimize execution risk as you are deploying capital.
Interesting. Very good. All right.
Yeah. So that sort of takes care. So then the next thing to think about is distributions and taxes.
And
so
what was that fund of fund in the last? Sorry.
Yes. So the fund of fund in the last, what I would say to people is that all three of these, the special purpose vehicle, the multi-property specified offering, and the blind fund, can all be fund of funds. They can all be set up in a fund of fund way, meaning that, so for instance, you could say, you know what, I'm going to create a fund that I want to invest in multifamily, and you want to maybe do some assisted living, right? So you have assisted living and multifamily in your fund, in your blind fund. And I come along and I'm like, I get to know you. I like you as an operator. I like your work. I see it. And I say, you know, I want to set up, maybe you're raising, you know, 200 million for your blind fund. I come along and I say, hey, Prashant, like, I really like the work that you're doing. And maybe it's a 506C offering. And I say, hey, I'd like to bring like 10 million to this deal. And you say, yeah, you know, I like the idea. And that's where, like, I could then create an entity of my own and raise 10 million in that entity and it would come into your fund with one check. And so that is like a fund to fund structure. You could, it could be categorized as a special purpose vehicle kind of thing, but ultimately it's fund to fund, like, because it's one entity investing into this other one.
So fund to fund is really not a in a literal meaning, it is like fund having five different funds. Yes, you can have that, but it's really a term that is used in this business very often.
Yeah. And like, even for like the syndications, for instance, you could say, for instance, once again, you have an entity that you've created because you've identified a multifamily that you like to buy, and you're raising money for it. And along comes myself and I'm like, hey, you know, you're raising, say, maybe you're raising 6 million, which is fairly typical. And I say, okay, I can bring 3 million of that. So then I might decide, instead of coming directly into your GP, I might decide, okay, I'll create an entity of my own and I'll be a limited partner into your deal and a GP in my own fund.
Got it.
So those are like some of the different ways people can sort of approach it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
So then one thing that I wanted to, that I think it's important to point out to people is that across the board, the distributions and the taxes are the same. So meaning that, you know, you're still, if there is, like, if you're dealing with a syndication, a blind fund, a fund of fund, like all of them is all dictated by the, you know, the PPM agreement in terms of what they're planning, how frequently they're planning on doing distributions. It could be on a quarterly basis, it could be on a monthly basis, but there's no difference in the way in which distributions are sort of done across all these different entities. And then second to that, taxes. So one of the big reasons why, for some investors, one of the reasons why they invest in multifamily syndications or just syndications in general, is that they want those tax benefits because of the cost segregation studies that are usually performed on the assets, be it multifamily, mobile home parks, assisted living facilities, whatever. And those cost seg studies enable us to accelerate depreciation on the property and, you know, typically in the hold periods result in investors not having to pay taxes on the cash distributions that they receive due to these paper losses. Across the board, all of, like, investors in all of the different entities have the opportunity to experience the same tax benefits across the board. And I just feel like that it was important to also point that out. And investors in all these different types must always ask to make sure that the operator intends and plans to share the depreciation benefits with them. And that's the only time that they would not experience it is if the operator decided to not share that benefit. So then this then brings me to the pros and cons for passive investors. So this slide here, so pros and cons for syndication. So first of all, when you're dealing with a syndication, believe it or not, in comparison to funds, syndication, investors in a syndication actually have more control. they have more control because they control what investments they choose to invest in. Whereas when you are dealing with a fund, you have now, remember, the fund will have an investment strategy. So you don't actually choose what investments the fund buys. You sort of understand and get comfortable with the people who are running that fund and their track record. And then ultimately they're the ones who are going to then pick those. So as a result, one of the pros for syndication is if you want to have control picking what deal you put your money into, then that's one of the reasons people will choose to stick with the syndication route. The due diligence approach is different between syndications and funds, because with a syndication, you typically, to the extent that they're not doing like a gigantic portfolio, if they're just doing one or two assets, you can easily dig into like the market and the underwriting and the assumptions and all that stuff. Whereas when you're dealing with a fund, especially a blind fund specifically, you're just not having that. It's just not something that will be going on because they could be buying maybe, you know, I've heard of funds that have at least 80 different assets. So like you as a passive investor, you're just not experiencing all of that. And then the timing for syndications, because it's only one asset, we're dealing with real estate, and real estate is a liquid asset. You know, it does take time and it's unpredictable. So because of that, you know, you just have to understand, like with a syndication, like when you have just one asset or two asset and you sell it, like it's just, it's gone. So, you know, you're all set. Whereas if you are dealing with a fund and the fund has 10, 15, 20 assets, the more assets that fund has is the longer the hold potentially could be. So you're just, you know, dealing with that. The cons for syndication, which is of course the pros for funds, is diversification. So when you invest your 50K into one property, you're only getting exposure into that one property. Whereas when you invest 50K into a fund, that's giving you exposure across all the different assets that are in that fund. It's almost like investing in a REIT. Only thing, you have ownership into these real estate investments and are getting K1s. So the cons for syndication as well is multiple K1s. So the more syndications you're in individually is the more K1s you need to then receive and then of course give to your accountant to help, you know, to do all your tax work. Whereas if you're investing with a fund, you're just getting one K1. And then the last thing here is the leverage of time. You know, as I said before, what you do with the fund, you give up control, but in exchange for giving up control, you don't have to spend all the time looking at all these different deals. So that is, you know, the pros and the cons between both of them as well. So I'll pause there for a minute in case you have any questions, Prashant.
Yeah, there is a question here in the chat. Ray is asking, these cost studies are fully expensed the first year or are they capitalized and depreciated over years? Yeah.
Great question. Great question. I can talk a little bit from my experience, and I'm happy for you to share from your experience, Prashant. Mm-hmm. But what I see is when they do the cost segregation study, I usually see, like if I'm investing 50K, I could see in the first year, maybe like a negative $40,000+ on my K1. And then in the subsequent year, there might be a little bit more that comes through. And then after that, I personally don't see any more, but I have passive losses. Like that 40K that came that first year, I may have only gotten operating distributions of like maybe $1,000. So I could only take $1,000 of that passive loss. So the passive losses then get pushed, deferred to the future.
Yeah. So you are right. Basically. So the reason why you are getting negative 40,000 is because they are doing the bonus depreciation. They are accelerating all the 5, 7, 15 years into first year. So what is cost segregation? You are dividing your property in 5 year segment, 7 year segment, or 15 year segment, but then you are depreciating everything and you are saying, listen, I'm going to take everything, all the depreciation now in first year. So for your example, you have minus 40,000 coming in the first year. You still have some more component left because you have, it's a 39.5 year schedule, right? So you still get some in the second year and third year. That 40,000, it all depends, you know, what kind of investors folks have in their syndication. If they are investors, you know, who are more professional, you know, professional investors, you know, like I am a professional investor, so I can write off the whole thing on day one. But those who are not, they can only offset passive losses against their passive income. So in example, if you have 1,000 passive income, you can only write that off. But that 39,000 is still sitting on your tax return to be depreciated over time. And part of that you can continue to take every year. And someday, if you know, if Lisa Hilton becomes a professional investor, you know, at that time, you know, she can just write off the whole thing.
Or, you know, when you go to sell the asset, that's where some of those passive losses can come in to help you. But even though there's depreciation recapture as well, so.
Yeah, depreciation recapture is captured at 25%, maximum 25%. But they're also, you know, again, I'm not a CPA, so I don't know much, but even if your tax bracket is 35%, the depreciation recapture will only be 25% maximum.
Yeah, I had the real estate CPA on my podcast earlier today. So he was breaking down how, like, there's like different parts of the bonus depreciation. And like, yeah, some of it is like 25%, and then a part of it could be like operating, could also get captured under operating income as well. Mm-hmm. But he was like, you know, that's where he then encourages investors, like if they're going to, like when this happens, that they understand like the timing, so that way they can look for other opportunities to invest in other syndications that could potentially help them to get more passive losses, incur more passive losses to offset those gains.
See, I must tell you one thing is that that this real estate is such a beautiful vehicle. You know, you have so many ways legally. I mean, these are the legal, these are not the loopholes. These are the tax codes written by IRS for investors like us to be able to invest in real estate and enjoy the tax benefits, basically.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, racing timing could be a con for syndication because it takes months to close a deal, underwriting, due diligence, etc. Could you please explain the pros and cons of funds versus REITs?
Wow. yeah, that's a great question. So REITs are kicking off dividend income, whereas syndications and real estate funds are kicking off operating distributions. So very different in terms of the tax treatment. And that is really the benefit of going with a real estate syndication or a real estate fund, is that you are getting operating distributions, and that money, when it comes to you, if you were doing the cost segregation studies, you then get that tax benefit where you can accelerate depreciation as long as that is continuing to be allowed, accelerate that depreciation, and then ultimately pay, defer paying taxes on that money. Whereas on a REIT, like, you know, when you, if you just bought it and now you're getting dividend income, that's just ordinary income. It's as a part of your ordinary income. It increases your ordinary income, and it is taxed accordingly until it becomes a qualified REIT investment, which I think is, don't quote me, but I think it has to do with the amount of time that you hold the REIT investment for. The longer you hold it, then it will have like a lower tax amount. But right off the bat.
Yeah, operating income is taxed at the maximum tax rate of 20%, right? And your ordinary income in REIT could be your ordinary tax bracket, which could be 30-35%.
Yeah, so that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing with REITs is that when you sell it, right, you're dealing with short-term and long-term capital gains, you know, just similar to like, if you are investing in the stock market, whereas when the syndication is, or that real estate fund that you're in, like sells their assets, once again, if you then take that money and invest it into another syndication, once again, you could be in a situation where you're now generating more cash flow in the stream of operating distributions. And you have the opportunity to now get more tax benefits on this new investment through cost segregation studies that they're performing on the asset. So, yeah.
No, very nice question, folks. I mean,
yeah, great question, Ray. Ray's good.
Yeah, keep them coming, you know.
but yeah, you know, I think the last thing I will touch on here for this slide is that, you know, for people who are investing in like syndications, passive investors, it's important to network. To the extent that they're dealing with a sponsor, like if you're dealing with a sponsor that is only having one deal like every 6 months or something, you know, that's where you probably, and you have cash that you could deploy more, like every quarter, then you're going to then need to network to meet more operators to then get to know them, like them, trust them, and their track record and all of that to deploy your hard-earned capital. If you're working with a fund, especially a blind fund, then that investment manager is working to put your money out into the marketplace and, you know, like get the deal flow going and get stuff, you know, sort of moving. So that's what I would say is the last bit that's like super important as well. And then fees and compensation. So between both of them, I would say that the fees and compensation is fairly similar. So you're going to have acquisition fees, asset management fees, refinancing fees to the extent that refinancing is actually done, and then guarantee fee on the loans. And then the profit splits, they can be straight. So what I mean by that, it could be a straight 70-30, or it could be a preferred return structure where you have anywhere between 6-8% preferred return, which is the percentage of money that is paid to investors first. So if an investor invests $100K, they're getting that $8,000 first, and then whatever is left after that is then split like 70-30 or 80-20. And then waterfall could be the same preferred return that I just spoke about, but then on top of that, when it comes to the remaining cash after the 8%, that could then be split, as I said before, 70-30 up until an IRR of like, say, 17, 18, or 19%, like anywhere around there typically. And then after that, they will then say, okay, let's split again 50-50. So the idea is that on this last bit is the operators are like, you know, we're going to, to the extent that we perform, we're incentivized to perform. And to the extent that we perform, we then are able to get more of that cash flow on the end. And that would only happen on pretty much when the asset is sold.
So this typically a waterfall structure, you know, you see in the deals where returns are a little bit on the higher side. I mean, from a syndication standpoint, I've seen people putting this waterfall structure. I mean, the goal, they set the goal, right? I mean, investors should get 17 IRR at least, 17, 18 IRR at least on the money. And if the deal is returning more, I mean, these indicators want to be compensated a little bit more also, right? Because they spend a lot of time. As Ray said, it takes a lot of time to find a deal, do the due diligence, put your hard money. It's years worth of work sometimes to get into one deal. Yeah. So it is, and that's why, you know, I mean, as the deal performs better, because syndicator has worked a lot on those deals, they want to be compensated a little bit more also.
Yeah. And what I would also say is like the straight split typically is on, you know, those deals that have a heavy value add component, because, you know, doing a preferred return on a heavy value add deal, it puts the operators behind the eight ball, to be honest with you, because they know that they have to take this deal and like turn it, like demographic shifts, or a lot of like heavy value add in terms of construction on the property and stuff like that. And that for me, when I see those kinds of deals, I feel like it warrants a straight split, like a 70-30 straight. Whereas if you're seeing a deal that is generating cash flow and it's a light value add, like for me, I like to see the preferred return because like there's this deal has the ability to generate cash flow. So, yeah.
Yeah. Ray's asking another question. If you want to sell your interest in a fund, how does a partner transfer work? And what are the options available in the market? good question. You know, it's all yours, Lisa.
So I'll start by saying the following is that, you know, number one, I would say to investors going into these deals that you want to go in from a perspective that you're not planning on selling your investment shares because real estate is an illiquid asset, and specifically these real estate syndications and being in a fund as well is fairly illiquid. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing is, I would, you know, if that is a moment of concern, I would talk to the operator that you're working with, the fund manager that you're working with, because in the PPM, there's always clauses in there talking about, like, if you wanted to sell your shares. And the reality is, if someone really wants to get out of, like, if I have an investor in my deal and they are unhappy and want to leave, I would rather grant them the ability to do so than to keep someone who is unhappy in the deal. And that means talking to, you know, my lawyers, my syndication attorneys, to make sure that we're doing the right thing to accommodate and to help them, so that way they can move on, because you don't want someone unhappy that's in your deal. Have you experienced this to date in your career? I haven't.
Yeah, I mean, I have experienced the same thing, you know, when, you know, and eventually I had to buy them out. You know, somebody was in my deal, they were happy. So basically, you know, I had to say, listen, if you want to go, you go, and you tell me what you want. They said, you know, I want X percent return on my money. So I bought them out, you know, they actually sold their share to me, not to another partner. So at that time, there is some negotiation that happens. I mean, I accepted what they asked for. But I mean, somebody may say, listen, I've given you 100,000 for a year. Give me 10% return on my money. Right. That's all I care. And then you can sell that share to somebody else. Those who are buying share, if the deal has done well, right. You know, they are probably getting more value. So there are two ways you can sell it to. Yeah, there's typically a discount. Yes, of course. You know, the one who is selling will be selling their share at discount to the one who is buying, because somebody is coming in at a, you know, some, if I'm the one who is selling, I will sell it at a discount so that somebody else can buy it from me and they get some benefit, some extra benefit out of it. Because you have not appraised the property at that time, right? I mean, it's a 3-year project. If you have not appraised the property after 1 year, you don't know how much property is going to give the return. If the property return was supposed to be 15% annualized, so if I have to sell it, I probably will sell it maybe after a year, not at a 15%, because that gain has not yet been realized.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I would sell it probably at a much lesser percentage. I mean, I would be lucky if I get my whole money back, maybe a little bit of interest on it, you know, 5%, 7%, something like that.
Yeah. Very good question, because I think a lot of people don't think about that part a lot.
Yeah,
definitely. So pros and cons of fund of funds. So I wanted to touch on this, you know, for a bit. So for the people who are thinking about investing, so investors thinking about investing in a fund of fund, you know, they run across a deal and they realize, oh, this is a fund of fund structure. So some of the pros and cons, the first pro, so starting with some of the pros, the first is, if this is a 506B offering, B as in boy, this is enabling you as an investor, it's providing you with an opportunity to invest in a deal that you wouldn't otherwise see. Because unless you had relationship directly with the operator, you should not, like, according to the S, and they're following the SEC rules, you would not be able to invest directly with them until their next offering. You know, they build a relationship with you and then now are able to offer on your next offering. So that's one of the pros of the fund of fund structures, is that it provides opportunities for people that don't have relationships with the head sponsor to be able to get opportunities to come into that deal. On a 506C offering, the other item, another benefit of fund of funds is that typically these fund of fund structures are usually partnered with fairly large operators who have higher minimums. So like they might have minimums of 100 to 250K to invest in their offerings. With a fund of fund manager, you could then gain access for a lower entry point, anywhere from 25 to 50K, which then enables you once again to get access to really high quality deals, but not have to get in at that higher entry point. So those are two items that I think are important to note. The other item, which is a pro but also a con, is that by you coming in, a lot of fund managers, by them coming in with one larger check, they're able to negotiate better terms for their fund. And they have the ability to pass that on to their investors to the extent that they are able to do so. However, it can also, this can then lead to the cons, because the con too is that sometimes by going through a fund manager, your returns might be slightly lower than if you went directly with the sponsor. However, keep in mind that sometimes the return, even though it might be slightly lower, it's still, chances are, it can be still very much a good return compared to having to, you know, buy real estate yourself or invest in REITs or, you know, stocks in the stock market going up and down. And I personally have had a fund that was similar to this. I invested directly through my fund of fund and then also directly with the sponsor. And quarter over quarter, it was like a $20 difference. And then ultimately, when we sold the property, the IRR was like, I think it was 25% with the sponsor and roughly almost 20% coming through our fund entity. So at the end of the day, investors still did very well. They were able to get their money all through COVID because this particular project performed well all through COVID while the market was going crazy. So just those are some of the things to think about when you come across a fund of fund structure and that people might not know about. So yeah.
Great knowledge nuggets, Lisa. I mean, these are the things that a lot of investors don't know, and not even syndicators know. I mean, I must tell you, 6 months ago, I was unaware of SPV, you know, special purpose entity, and I would not, many times I help other syndicators also, and I would just bring my investors onto the roster with them, and get the general partnership percentage. But with SPV, it becomes, you are shielding your investors, basically. So that's the secret, really, is that you are shielding your investors, giving them the opportunity, and you are cutting one check for a project. Or somebody bringing in my project through an SPV, I'm not dealing with 10, 15 investors. I'm just dealing with one entity who's bringing the money to me. And I'm giving the distribution to that entity. And then what that entity does is that their business, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the other items that I like about the fund of fund structure is that, you know, for someone like myself, I'm able to, you know, provide opportunities for investors. Like I could, like similar to what I said earlier about the identified, I forgot what it was called now, but the multi-property specified offering, like with a fund of fund, like you could, to the extent that you have a lot of deal flow, which is very important. I think the next slide is the pros and cons for syndicators actually. But to the extent that you have deal flow, because sometimes, you know, I will be presented a variety of deals in 1 week. And it's like, wow, like all these deals are going on. And you're like, wow, you could create like an entity that, say, hey, you have this multifamily, you have this mobile park deal and this self-storage deal, and you know, allow investors to invest in your entity like at 50K, and then gives them exposure across all of these. If you are able to like raise like $1 million, $2 million, right? Like that's 500 across all these different deals that give them that exposure. Those are some of the things that I think is just so creative and I like about this kind of structure. As well.
And it is up to the syndicators or the operators to, or individual to decide. These are very flexible structures, right? Yeah. And you can decide your own structure. And Ray's asking again is, what is the typical duration? I mean, the duration could be as little as 12 months or it could be as little as 5 years. I mean, there's no hard and fast rule. I mean, you can say that this is SPV. I want to invest in only in one project, and that project may end in 18 months or in 6 months for that matter. And you get the returns in you, and then you dissolve your SPV right there. Or your SPV can, your project may go on for 5 years, 10 years, doesn't matter. You get the returns, continue to distribute it basically.
Yeah, a lot of flexibility, you know, definitely working with lawyers on on, you know, sort of setting up the right structures based on what you want. And then, of course, communicating to investors to make sure that they're on board with what you're trying to create. So then that brings me to the pros and cons of funds for syndicators. So a lot of syndicators, you know, now that they're like, wow, funds, like how could that work in my business? Like how could I, you know, add them to my business? So the pros, capital on hand. And of course, you know, I don't know which syndicator wouldn't like that. all of the real estate investors that are trying to buy these commercial properties would love to have capital on hand so that way they can go after and acquire deals that they see quickly and not have any worries about closing. Ability to acquire properties quickly, that's built into that, and then provide diversification. So once again, by them creating a fund, they might now see multiple properties and then can start to add them to their fund, as opposed to like, you know, like, oh, they're just dealing with this property so they can't buy the next one. They have the fund, they can, you know, execute. The con is like, if they don't have deal flow, then a fund can really, really be a problem for them. Because if you take money from investors, I believe that you really need to be thinking about giving investors return. And if you don't have an asset to be able to generate the cash flow to give them return, I think that that's a problem. So I think it's best to create a fund once you have deal flow and the ability to generate it, or to be the ability to use tools to help you to deal with the lack of deal flow, which I can talk about. And then secondly, manage returns for investors. So, you know, so one of the, it's a con in the sense that, you know, embedded in the deal flow item is that if you then take money, the opportunity costs, right? So like investors could have taken that 50K. If it takes you 6 months, they could have seen another deal next week, the week after, that they could deploy capital into. And that's that opportunity cost that you then need to be cognizant of. And then you're probably going to need to have third-party administration. If you start building out a fund and then having all of these investments, inherently it's going to get big and you're going to need to think about the cost of having third-party admin to manage the fund. So you want to just make sure that you're thinking about that. It's not necessarily a con, but it's just something that you need to think about and shop around to make sure you understand what entail. So key questions that investors, passive investors, should be asking fund managers. The first is, what is the structure of the fund? Back in the very beginning slide, I talked about fund of funds, I talked about blind funds, I talked about syndications, like understanding what the structure is so that way you understand how, when you put your money in, how the structure works, how it moves through the structure. Secondly, what is the investment strategy? What are they planning on doing? Are they buying multifamily? And then if so, what type of multifamily? Is it class B, class A, class C? Like, are they gonna do deep value add? Are they just doing regular value add? Are they looking for core assets? You wanna ask these questions because that helps you to assess track record. Because have they done this kind of stuff before? And if they have, then you know, okay, I have this particular operator has done these kinds of deals. They're just doing wash, rinse, and repeat. And that then decreases your execution risk. You want to understand the whole period, which Ray had some questions about, you know, what is the whole period of that particular fund? You want to understand what the returns are. And then lastly, you want to ask about the income and loss allocations. So you want to understand, like, how are they allocating income and loss? Is it based on what you've invested or some other, you know, maybe it's that 70-30 split, as I said before, maybe it's 50-50, what the waterfalls are, et cetera. Cash flow versus appreciation. So you want to understand, not just in a fund, but like even just in general, as you're investing in syndications, like look to see how much of the money is coming from cash flow and how much of the money is coming when the property is sold. If more of the money is coming when the property is sold, then this deal is betting on appreciation. It's nothing's wrong with it. It's just that you want to be educated and empowered investor to know that, okay, I'm betting on this value of the property to increase to ultimately bring me the returns, bring home the returns in the end. Whereas if you're looking for cash flow, then you're going to look for a property that it's either equal or the cash flow is more. And trust me, they're out there because I've seen them. And then underwriting assumptions, you want to understand what the underwriting assumptions are. Many times those include rent projections. They also include expense cuts that they intend to plan to do. And it also might include income, other streams of income that they're planning on bringing on board. You want to understand, you know, just sort of think about it. You know, you could check out online and sort of see, you know, if they're looking to increase rents, maybe Google if it's Atlanta, like, you know, are there new businesses moving into the Atlanta area? You can Google that online and just sort of see, like, does it make sense? Is it reasonable? Lastly is returns, profit splits, and communication plan. So preferred return, as I said, we talked about before about when you would typically want to see that. The profit splits, once again, the 70-30, or, you know, after you get to a certain IRR level, seeing a second split there as well. And then communication plan. To me, this is also very important. You want to know that these are, you're going to be working with people who are going to be keeping you in the know about like what is going on with the investment. So either they have quarterly updates or monthly property updates, you know, and quarterly financials. So giving you P&L to take a look at, as well as the rent roll. Even better if they're able to, you know, give you webinar updates, that would be even more awesome too. But yeah, like those kinds of things, you know, just helps investors to know what's going on with the property. And then last but not least, any questions, and, you know, happy to answer any questions that people have at this point. I know Ray had a ton, but like if anyone else has any questions on any of the other functions.
And those were great. And those were great questions, by the way. I mean, those are very deep questions, you know, kind of make us think what are we doing. So folks, you know, feel free to ask any questions. But one thing which I had promised, you know, some of you may not be investors, or some of you want to know more about passive investing. You know, of course, Lisa has a lot of resources here. But besides that, you know, we can sign up for Lisa's everything. You know, you sign up to invest with Lisa, to our podcast, you know, and take the ebook, you know, on passive investing. Besides these three things, I have some of these also. I have a 7-day email course, you know, in which you get 7 emails and 2 or 3 minutes each, and you just kind of take that information, sink it in 7 days, you know a little bit more about passive investing, benefits of passive investing. So I'm going to leave 2 links here in this chat. One is benefits of passive investing, 7 days email course. And second, I have a passionate passive investor club where I have more deeper education than 7-day email course. So feel free to sign up for any of them, or both of them for that matter. PPIC has little more content than 7-day email course. But Lisa has a lot of good stuff, you know, podcast. I know I want to start some podcast someday. And I've been following Lisa for some time. So
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, connect with her on her podcast, you know, and download her ebook. You know, it's pretty good book. Any questions, guys, anybody has here? Monica, Chrissy, Ray, Ivan, Marcelo. I think we covered a lot of good stuff already. I felt it was a smaller group, and we ended up covering a lot of deeper stuff than just, you know. True. Yeah. So how do we access to fund a fund?
Yeah, like just through building relationships. Like for me, like the information I present, I'll put also in the chat, you know, lisahilton.com, reaching out to me, that's one of the ways, lisahilton.com/invest.
Yeah.
And then in terms of platforms or websites, I really feel like like you sort of build relationships with syndicators. That's how you pretty much get access to these private investments. Like,
yes.
I think that's the primary way.
See, that's the fundamental benefit of networking, right? I mean,
yeah.
If you do not have existing relationship with a sponsor or with somebody, you cannot really invest with them because most of the folks don't have 506C. They have 506B kind of offerings. So it's always good to network more and more and more in this business, right? I mean, if you are an investor, continue to connect with, you know, like Lisa's website, go to Lisa's website, right? Go to myrealtygains.com, subscribe for the newsletter, ask me a question here and there, schedule a call with me, schedule a call with Lisa. And when you are connected with us, you are connected with a lot more people because we are, at least I am sending a lot of content, you know, you read my newsletter, you know, you start following us onto different platforms, you know, so you have different webinars that are happening. So you are even nowadays with internet and everything, you are connected with a lot of people just not leaving your home for that matter, right? I mean, we can connect with a lot of people and have meaningful relationship, right? Not just coming to the webinar and forget about it. What else? Have it. See, a substantial relationship is recognized in law only when you have had a meaningful phone conversation with somebody, right? If you talk to any SEC attorney, they'll say, doesn't matter for how long you have been coming on my webinar, you have to have at least one call in which you have discussed your goals with somebody, right? Yeah. That is called a meaningful relationship, basically. So you never know. I mean, we talk, Lisa talks to like hundreds of people. If you need something, she'll connect you with somebody right away, right?
A lot of us in this business, we are definitely connectors and we are able to connect people with tons of different operators. And, you know, listening to podcasts, listening to webinars like these that Prashant is putting on, like he's bringing on people who are syndicators. Like,
yeah.
So then through that, that's how you know him. And then you are able to meet a ton of other people that you wouldn't have had access to. Similar for my podcast, like a ton of the people that I have on my podcast are primarily syndicators. So like by listening to them, like you're able to see, oh yeah, like, this is a syndicator, like you can then go to their website, check them out and start like this. But you know, a large part of this is the reason why a lot of syndicators have chosen to, a lot of them are sort of shifting into the fund space is because they know that people are busy and like they don't have time to be like going to all the meetups that are going on. Like I'll be honest, like when I was working full time, like it was super hard like to go to all the meetups. Like it's just impossible. Like I have deadlines and all these other things that are going on. Like I just don't have capacity to do all of that. You have like decision fatigue because of all the decisions.
Yeah.
So that's where like these funds can be very helpful.
Yeah.
You know, to like allow investors to be able to get access because they're leveraging the relationships and the network of fund managers or operators who create these kinds of vehicles. In terms of books that you'd recommend for beginners, I would say the first book that I could think of is called The Hands-Off Investor by Brian Burke.
Yeah, very good.
It's
very
a
good
Bigger
book.
Pockets book, Bigger Pockets brand book, but it's called The Hands-Off Investor by Brian Burke. So that's for anyone that's interested in being a passive investor in the real estate space. Hands down, I would read that book. And then for anyone who's trying to be active, I would say the best ever real estate syndication book by Joe Fairless. That can help you on the active side for real estate syndications. And then if you're interested in being active, like so purchasing, like buy and hold, that kind of stuff, I would go back to Bigger Pockets. They have a ton of like active books in terms of executing the Burr strategy and a ton of other things.
Yeah, there are. So you see, the way I say it, don't bog yourself down too much. I mean, yes, start with one or two books. I can read all about swimming, all my life, and I would not know. I would not know even an inch of what swimming is unless I jump into the pool. So, so connect yourself with a syndicator in some capacity. You know, learn from somebody. Yes, you can read the book, but I read the book all the time and I forget in 15 minutes what I read.
Yeah.
I mean, that's me, maybe. But
no, I mean, that's right. You got to take action.
Yeah, you have to take an action, you know. So read for some time, but get up, you know, and do something. Offer your help to somebody, you know, for God's sake, you know, for free, you know, and you will be amazed how many people are willing to take your help. And in return, everybody is willing to give you back much more than what you deserve. Yeah. Or what you, so it always happens. If you give selflessly, you're going to get it back anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's how you learn. I mean, that's how I learned. I mean, my first project, 500 unit deal, I helped somebody 6 months, day and night, and they made me GP on that project itself, you know. So what else did I want in my life, you know? I learned I could write a book myself, you know, with my eyes closed. I gained so much knowledge. Yeah. So yes, read books, you know, hands off investors, you know, you have.
I also think, you know, like getting clear on how you want to play. Like, yeah. How did you know that you wanted to buy the 500 unit, Prashant?
I just hold somebody's hand. I said, this guy has done good work. And all I want is I would hold his hand so tight. Even if he wants to leave me, I would not leave him. Right. So he found the deal. He was doing the deal. I was helping him. I said, I'll bring my investor to the table. I'll bring my network to the table, and I'll do whatever I will. I'll sweep his office. I'll clean his chair, but I'll learn from him. Right.
And how did you meet him to then get this opportunity?
Through networking, through these groups, you know, you go meet somebody, you present yourself, you are selfless. I'm not here to take your, I mean, in this phone call, I cannot take anything from anybody, right? Mm-hmm. But we are still putting time and effort. So you meet somebody, you present yourself as a selfless guy, mm-hmm. Somebody approaches you, and maybe my stars were right, or maybe whatever it was, I connected with them, and, you know, here you go. I mean, 3 years later, I mean, 3-4 years later, you know, I have 1500 units in my portfolio. Mm-hmm. But I would attribute it to that first effort, you know, and I still do that. I still put a lot of effort trying to connect with a lot of people.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It's very powerful. Like, you can meet someone and that person has they could change your whole trajectory.
One of the five people, you know, whom we are talking to, we can form a group. It is possible, right?
Yeah.
We can form a group and we can do a deal. So who knows? Right? Anything can happen, you know.
Yeah.
You cannot discount me. I cannot discount you. I cannot discount Ray, Monica, yeah. Whatever.
Even the group we're in together, as in the mastermind we're in together, there are so many like collaborations. It's so like, many,
yeah.
People get together and then next thing you know, like they're doing a deal and it's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, very,
it's amazing.
Yeah, very, very
yeah,
well.
Great. We'll do a deal.
yes. Yeah, we will do a deal. Guys, Lisa, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your time. It was a smaller group. We had good. I hope you had a good time. I had good time.
Yeah, I had a good time. It was awesome.
Talking and discussing, you know, these things are important, right? I mean, maybe there's no tangible value here, but intangible. Yes, yeah. you will see the benefit of it somewhere.
100%.
Thank you so much, Lisa, and thank you so much, folks. You. Appreciate your time and be well, and we'll connect with you soon.